Good morning.
Good morning.
Today we'll be reading from 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3, starting at verse 7, and read verse 7 and 8. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous, as he is righteous. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil. For the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. If you want to be taken seriously in most corners of society today, I would recommend not bringing up the devil in conversation. Even in many academic and professedly Christian circles, where belief in God is not considered irrational, there is still a real hesitancy to speak about the devil. There is something about an ancient spiritual being that is the very embodiment of evil and darkness that embarrasses those who wish to be taken seriously in the modern world. Needless to say, Jesus does not share that modern sensibility. Not only did Christ not shy away from talking about the devil, but Christ faced Satan directly during his 40 days in the wilderness, and indirectly throughout his earthly ministry by casting out many of the devil's demonic forces. But of course, Christ's knowledge of the devil goes even further back than that. Jesus is the great I Am, God incarnate. He was there in the beginning, which means he witnessed Satan's fall from heaven. It also means that he was sustaining the universe when satanic deception was taking place in the Garden of Eden. And this is why he came down from heaven. Christ, the Almighty Creator, came down to face Satan, his creature. Christ came to destroy the works of the devil. This confrontation was prophesied thousands of years before Christ's birth in Genesis 3:15. Genesis 3:15 is what many theologians call the proto-evangelium, which is just a fancy way of saying first gospel. In this passage, God is cursing the serpent for his treachery and telling him of his ultimate defeat by the seed of the woman. In this verse, God declares, "I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." Satan's destruction is foretold in that passage, but that's not all. There's more. And it's easy for us to miss the significance of what is being said here. We tend to think, well, a head injury is much worse than a foot injury, so Christ wins and the devil loses. And that's true. But when we say that, we are minimizing the price that had to be paid. And that is something the original audience of Genesis would not minimize. The ancient Near Eastern person reading this passage would have instantly known what it means when a serpent strikes your heel. It meant that you're going to die. Indeed, people in many parts of Africa and India, where anti-venom isn't available, they still understand this. For them, the serpent lying in the grass still represents death, both to them and to their children playing in the field or by the river. In these villages, people don't come back celebrating and saying, "Guys, the snake bit me on the foot, but it's okay. He's dead now. I stomped his head." No. They understand there's no such thing as walking off a black mamba bite. The crushing of the serpent's head was not the only thing prophesied in Genesis 3, but the death of the Messiah as well. Christ defeated the devil, but that defeat came at a price. You may look around at the sin in our world and the death and the disease and think to yourselves, "Satan doesn't look defeated to me." You know from personal experience that Satan is very active. So how exactly did Christ defeat him? And that's a good question. And it's similar to another question that many Christians ask themselves, which is, if Christ has set me free from the bondage of sin, and if I'm no longer a slave to sin, then why can I not stop sinning? Why have I not been delivered from the old man in me in this body of death? But the answer is because salvation is a process. God saves us in stages. We were saved at our justification. We are being saved throughout our lives, which is our sanctification. And we will be saved at our glorification on the last day, when the remaining sin in us is finally destroyed. A similar truth can be applied to the devil. The devil was destroyed at the cross. He is currently being destroyed as the gospel goes to the nations, and the sin in the lives of the saints is being put to death. And the devil will be destroyed, ultimately, when Christ comes on the last day to cast him into the lake of fire and defeat the last enemy, which is death, the greatest of Satan's works. Satan knows his defeat is sure. And this is why we still experience his wrath on earth today. As Revelation chapter 12 says, "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short." When we look at the history of God's people, Satan's defeat at Calvary becomes a lot more clear. For thousands of years, God's people were confined primarily to one people group in one relatively small area. Every other nation in the world was Satan's to deceive and to use as he desired. That is not how God's people are defined post-resurrection. Today, Christ is gathering for himself a kingdom of priests from every tribe, tongue, and nation. After binding up the strong man at the cross, Christ is now plundering his house. Christ will have for himself an inheritance of nations whom he will raise up on the last day. Satan is no longer able to deceive the nations as he once was before Christ destroyed his dominion. And as far as death goes, we have seen the first fruits of its demise as well. When Christ left the tomb victorious and very much alive on the third day, Christ is the living one who now has the keys to the gates of death and Hades. So yes, we must take the Apostle Peter's words seriously when he warns us that the devil prowls about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. But that truth must also be understood in the light of what was done for us on the cross. Satan may still be a lion, but he is now a lion on a leash. Which is why we can say together with the reformer and hymn writer, Martin Luther, "The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure, because Christ came to destroy the works of the devil."